Romans 12:18. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. So, you can keep your eyes closed for a sec. Imagine some smells, some dried fish, a whole bunch of sweaty bodies crammed in a bus. There's also some gasoline smells. Someone eating corn. There's maybe a chicken or two. And you open your eyes, and there are two old ladies dressed all in black coming back from a funeral. A man in handcuffs being led by someone else onto the bus. Moms with babies on their backs. Babies who are passed head over head to the front of the bus. A woman with a tub of fried fish. And then three little kids run to the front. They have to pee, make the bus stop for them. So this is just a scene that I wrote down. I was amazed by the variety. This was a bus in Malawi when we were there. Not this last time, but the time before, so about 4 years ago. And just at the end of the day, I was sort of fascinated by this vast experience of human existence that was around me. It's filled with individuals, but the bus was literally filled with every single airspace was packed with people, and yet we are all together, but separate. And I get a similar feeling of that. It's that sense of awe of our each unique expressions that I was talking about last time. When I ride the subway in Toronto, I love riding the subway. And it just, you know, it could be the middle of the night and there's crowded college students, there's people coming back from clubs, there's, you know, a few workers who are just getting off their late shifts. There are me and my friends who are coming back from dancing. You know, then in the middle of the day, there are people going to work, there are people with children, there are school kids in their outfits, and it's just an amazing, just to revel in that amazing mix that we have. And in Toronto, half the population is not from Canada, so it means we have a huge variety of people coming from different countries, different experiences. So how do we all live together? Today I'm going to be talking about community, if you haven't figured it out. We've moved a lot in the last few years. We've been settled now in Toronto for 3 years, but before that, we moved 5 times in 5 years. 3 different states. And now Toronto, totally different country. There was 1 year where we had to file taxes in all 3 states. So I've realized that I have this really deep need to feel connected, to learn, to share my skills with people, to be part of a community. Each time I moved to a new place, it was always a struggle. I always wanted to feel connected right away, and depending on how long we were going to be there, had different amounts of time to sort of build that community. Sometimes it had to happen in the 8 months that we were going to be in Connecticut, the 8 months we were in Santa Cruz, or the few years that we are in Minnesota. So, you know, it's always in my mind, and it takes different forms. Thomas Kelly, a Quaker, said that love of God and love of neighbor are not two commandments, but one. Love of God and love of neighbor are not two commandments, but one. When I'm loving my neighbor, increasing the sum total of love and justice in the world, I'm also loving God. And when I'm loving God, I'm loving my neighbor. And I don't think I'm alone in wanting to feel connected to people, right? I talked a little bit, just briefly, about Findhorn. It's this spiritual community up in northern Scotland. If you're ever in that neck of the woods, I was on my way to Finland and said, well, it's kind of on the way. Of course, it's really far. Scotland is not close to Finland at all. But I was like, I I'm flying over. I might as well stop. Findhorn is a beautiful, intentional community where I had a week of being with people from all different countries, experiencing living in kingdom living. It was actually very similar to CFO, with lots of time to connect with one another, explore ourselves, walk in nature, dance together, play games. And I saw there people who were having like their first CFO experience, that time where you just can see that people for the first time are being accepted and loved for who they are. And they sort of are amazed that that can actually happen somewhere. You know, that people are giving hugs that don't usually hug, and people are, you know, dancing who don't usually dance. And so it's just, I love those places where we can get out of our comfort zone and sort of and bond together. And so my work with Spirit in Action and my work with CFO, JFO camps is to encourage more people to feel this connectedness, this appreciation that we can have for each other. Sometimes it's small things that I do with Spirit in Action. We get lots of requests for grants, and sometimes I have to say, you know, sorry, you don't fit our criteria. We're focusing on Africa now. So I got an email from someone in India, and I said, you know, I put back a response saying, affirming him, saying, you're doing amazing work. I read through the full proposal. These are some really good things. Have you thought about these other things? Here are some other NGOs that might help you. And he got a response. He said, thanks so much for taking the time to read through my email. So that can just, you know, that little bit of effort can make someone feel really appreciated, accepted, and, you know, that's part of creating a more positive world. Other small things like the pay it forward at the cafe. I think Dana still owes someone. Better get on that. I did a pay it forward on the bridge, on the Bay Bridge last year. I was feeling so full of joy. I said, I'm going to do it. I've never done this before, but I said, I'm going to pay for the person behind me. And it was just such a joy to, you know, put down that $5. You know, coffee is a lot these days. The bridge toll is a lot. This is not just like a dollar. You're given a little bit to help someone else. And I just could imagine that person being really sort of surprised, startle us with joy. Like, whoa, what's this about? So again, one of the things that I love about community is that it brings together people who have things in common and also people who have very different backgrounds. So that diversity is a range of human experience is really important for me. And part of what is so great about camp is that it's okay to be diverse in our beliefs. And at my church, it's okay to be diverse in our expressions of our faith. It's God bringing us all together. And so that's part of what is that base of community, that peace building. This is the first step in peace building, is being okay with that diversity. So you may notice I'm wearing a yellow shirt. My first point here goes along with the shirts. Just my first point for peace building is be nice to people. Be kind. Don't just get into arguments, but actually go out of your way to be kind. So that part of the pay it forward is being kind. Maybe it's not revolutionary, but sometimes those little things, those small acts that we can start right now doing can be part of building our spiritual practice. So even when people are weird, different, look funny, being friendly to them, being open, welcoming them in the dance, welcoming at church, at the coffee hour, that's, that can be a step towards building peace. I hear often, oh, well, in the city, people just don't smile and say hi to each other. I say, well, how often do you smile and say hi to people as you're walking down the street? And usually they're, no one's saying hi to me first. Well, start saying hi. It's squeaking a little bit, huh? Sorry about that. And so part of my practice is also just saying hi when I walk down the streets, even in the city. People usually smile back. They usually say hi back. Hold the door for someone. It's that easy. Most people are just seeking that kindness, that acceptance for who they are, that to be liked for who they are. So that's like all the stuff that I was just talking about yesterday around fear. So much of us are holding the fear of what if people don't like us, and just affirming that you're okay as you are. That can be revolutionary. And it often has a ripple effect. Our Spirit in Action logo has a little ripple effect on our showing that we're expanding out. When we do a drop of kindness, it goes to other people. So pay it forward. When you pay it forward, someone else does, and someone else does. And it also has a ripple effect within our lives. If someone holds the door open for me, maybe I'll catch the bus and I'll be in a better mood like the rest of the day. And the opposite too, if someone hurts me or makes some sort of snide remark or like slams the door in my face, like I might turn around and do something bad to someone else too, or just walk around kind of with cloud over my head, that cloud of fear over my head. So just recognizing that we can create positive ripples or sort of like negative, I guess that would be like nuclear bomb. And so one of the little ways I do this is I always thank my dance partners. Again, you wouldn't think that you'd have to say that, but even if it's a beginner and they completely screw up and step on my foot, I just say like, hey, thanks for the dance. Always accept the invitation. I'd love to dance with you. Thank you. And I did that at a workshop, and then a few days later, I got an email from one of the dance partners said like, thanks for being patient with me when we were dancing. I was like, yeah, of course. I'm not going to yell at you when you're just trying to learn. So when I get that kind of validation of small acts of kindness, it makes me realize how important those things are, even if I dismiss it in the moment. Choosing to accept, choosing to thank people, choosing to be kind. Even if it's just like not being mean, sometimes that can be what people need to build community. So I have three ways that I'm doing this, building community. One is inviting, two is listening, three, finding common ground. Again, it's just simple steps that I'm doing. So one, inviting. Invite people to join groups. Invite people to CFO. Invite people to camp. We had a great friend in Minnesota who... Jeff Hart, who is really, really good at this, he just had no sort of like any sort of filter. They might say like, oh, they might not want to go. I'm not going to invite them. He just invited everyone. No thought about like this might be an odd kind of grouping of people to go camping. He just invited everyone. And so we ended up with these like motley, random tent cities in the campground in Minnesota with just a whole lot of fun. He was from some sort of biology immunology department, Boyd was from history department, we had other friends from psychology and ed psychology, and we just all got together and had such a great time together, and it was all because Jeff just invited people. We were invited, other friends were invited, and that's how we met some of our best friends in Minnesota. You probably know this similar sort of guy, Larry at the job when I worked in the office, insurance office. He was the guy who made sure everyone knew where the party was on Thursday evenings. You know, like, where are we all going? Okay, Larry would make sure everyone was invited. And so I went, and that's how I got my raise, was at one of those happy hours. So invite people and make sure you invite the boss too. So it's, again, these are not huge, and they're still important changes. Small steps. Each is getting us closer. And I just have in my notes that that's a good place to use and not but. I said, I had originally written, it's not huge, but it's through small changes that the world has improved. But instead, again, it's not huge, and it's through these changes that these small steps that we make changes. I'm not sure if you hear the difference. Anyway, it's just an example. So step two, so first one was inviting people, welcoming. Step two is listening. At Findhorn, part of the sharing, there was lots of time for sharing. It was reflections after different activities. And so we got a chance to be in our group of about 15 and just to share and listen. And it was not to be a dialogue. It was just to be someone was sharing and the rest of us were listening. Again, not offer advice or respond in any way, but just to be supportive listeners for them. It goes along with that vulnerability stuff I was talking about yesterday. When someone feels that they're not going to be judged for what they share, they can be really open, and then they're not worried that they're going to get all this advice about how to fix them. It's just allowing that space and creating that safe space is just, the listeners are just supposed to listen, the sharers can share. I had a really beautiful experience with this. It was when there was a lot of tough times at the ACFO meetings, I was there. And there was one other teen. I went to one of the annual meetings, and there was one other teen who said, you know, I really want to just hear what your experience is. What are your thoughts about camp? What is your thoughts on this experience? And so I told him. No one else had said, you know, I want to hear what you think. And he did. I don't know who he was. I don't remember anything about him except for that he asked that. And I'm sure I didn't change his mind in that little short exchange, but it was just that, you know, that listening validated why I was there. I wasn't just there to be a vote. I was there to be part of a dialogue. And so I really always appreciated that I had that time to share, and that sort of made a little bit of healing around that process. That goes along with that tool of tell me more. He was kind of saying, I want to hear more about what you're experiencing. Tell me more. I don't know. So part of this that I've been working with a lot this year is really letting each person's truth be true. And again, it sounds so simple, but, you know, I don't like gardening. That's not my thing. I hear people say, oh, I just love getting in there, getting my fingers in the dirt. I love the plants. I love being able to provide my own food. I like eating produce from the garden. Like, don't get me wrong. But, like, that process is not therapeutic to me that I hear people talking about. And so, for me, letting each person's truth be true is just saying, like, yeah, they really do like it. They're not just saying that because I don't think that, I can't possibly understand how that would be therapeutic. Letting that person's truth be true. They really feel that way. I really like yoga. I'm not just saying, oh yeah, I like yoga, like because that makes me like look like a cool person or something like that. I get real benefit out of it. Maybe it's the same thing with driving. You know, some people really like driving, and some people are just like, how could you possibly like driving? So letting each person's truth be true means that you can really like driving, and you can really understand that other people wouldn't like driving. You could really want kids, and you could really understand how other people might not want to have kids. And also in this is allowing all experiences. It's not generalizing that everyone knows this. Everyone understands what I'm about to say. Everyone has had this experience. It's really just That's the part about speaking my truth. My truth is that I don't like gardening, and I want to hear, you know, from someone else who does like gardening. I'm glad Boyd likes gardening, because then we can get tomatoes and, you know, fresh herbs, so I'll allow that to be true. So Sean, the pastor at our church, said to behold one another with holy curiosity. Behold one another with a holy curiosity. That means we're really interested in each person. We really want to understand. This goes well with that idea that feelings can be real but not true. I can feel underappreciated even if there are lots of people who really do appreciate me. And getting to understand that is a part of, you know, is about the inquiry of the holy curiosity. So that was step two. What was that? Listening. Inviting listening. Number three, finding common ground. So sometimes you might not be able to ever make that bridge, make that perfect, like everyone's, get to a place where everyone is liking gardening. But maybe you can find some spaces in between. And that can be where the healing and the peace are really building. Especially if you can't walk away from working with that person. You know, sometimes the way we deal with creating peace is we just don't talk to anyone who doesn't, like, agree with us. Say, like, oh, look, we're all at peace now. But sometimes we have to get along with people, and so that's when we have to put in this work. I mentioned in the book that When God Talks Back, and mentioned that it was about a religious experience that's very different from mine. But as I read it, I almost fell out of my seat when I saw that they were talking about letters to God. I was like, oh, I know that. I can relate to letters to God. In the book, they describe it like I might start with Dear God, and then I'm thinking about it, and then write out what I'm thinking about. It's like, oh yeah, like that's totally, I get that. They use the term afterglow when they talked about the time after their service, and they talked about prayer warriors. It's like, yeah, again, like we are having different experiences, maybe different ways of approaching things, but they are still using prayer warrior. I know what that is. We could probably talk about that. We could probably have a good time eating cookies at Afterglow together. You know, this, so finding those connections, those are just sort of surface ones, but we can find those connections. And also in that, the deeper level was that the church was really founded on this intimacy with God, and unconditional love from God and for others. And that's, you know, just exactly what CFO is for me, that intimacy with God, practicing that as part of my faith. For a few years in college, my New Year's resolution was to be open to changing my mind. And the important part was that I had to then say when I had changed my mind, that I had to say that out loud. So it wasn't just that, like, you know, I want my mind to be open, I want to be learning new things, but it was also that, like, I'm going to say, yeah, you know what, I'm starting to see what you're saying, I'm starting to agree with you. And again, that's just exactly what's on the shirt. Don't just try to be right by being right. You'll be right, you know, you can be right by coming around, by saying that you've changed your mind, by creating that peace. Not just sticking to an idea because that's when you were right. And that creates a more honest space for listening, too. When the person believes that you can change your mind, that's when you can keep the discussion going. And then sometimes you can't find common ground, so maybe that's when you can let it go. Dana started his talks at Pacific Redwoods with a grocery store analogy. Talked about, like, okay, you go to the grocery store, there are lots of things on the shelves, only a few things are on your list. Only a few things are for you. You might not want those things, but you want these things. You just go in and you get what you need and you can leave the rest there. Rod Romney talked about how CFO talks are like a fish on a plate. You can just take the meat and you can leave the bones. Leave what's not for you. Take what's for you. In the Quaker meetings, we say, sometimes this message is not for me. Sometimes it's for me to listen to. Sometimes it's not for me to listen to. In Malawi, we went to a loud, loud Pentecostal service. And I could very quietly, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. It was very, very clearly very powerful. The truth for them was that this was powerful. The truth for me is that I was quietly reciting the Lord's Prayer in my head over and over and over again for like a half an hour. These prayers meant something for them, and I could have my prayers mean something for me, and I was respectful of that service. Letting it go, that knowing that I didn't have to make it work for me at that point. So we can build community by this inviting, by listening, by finding common ground, and then we can serve one another. I'm doing okay. Serve one another and work for peace. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. I love that prayer. Rachel Naomi Remen from Kitchen Table Wisdom wrote a great essay, Helping, Fixing, or Serving. Talks about those different categories. She says, serving is different from helping. Helping is not a relationship between equals. A helper may see the other as weaker than they are, needier than they are, and people often feel this inequity. When we help, we become aware of our own strength, but when we serve, we don't serve with our own strength. We serve with ourselves, and we draw from all our experiences. Our limitations serve, our wounds serve, even our darkness can serve. Serving makes us aware of our wholeness and its power. So the idea of serving, we come with who we are. We come with that Spirit of God within us, and we are meeting and serving that other Spirit of God in the other person. So it's not about, I'm going to help you. Let me be the powerful one to sort of fix what's going on. Fixing is the other category of I have the solution and you have the problem. Let's work this out. Serving is really meeting together. And so with Spirit in Action, I try to put this into practice, this service rather than hierarchical giving or fixing. It's really about encouraging that horizontal giving, the peer-to-peer village banks sharing the gift. Another way is just acknowledging when I don't know something, which is often when I'm dealing with international issues. I try to learn all I can, but then, you know, at some point I say, you know, I don't know about how that might work in your community. So a phrase that Boyd had, when we first moved to Canada and really were figuring out what we knew and what we didn't know and how much we didn't know, even though we thought we knew about Canada. From a position of extreme privilege and ignorance, blah, 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 blah. I'm just going to put it up there. I don't know what I'm doing here. I want to hear from you. Don't always assume my way is the best way or the American way is the best way. There might be a different Malawi way that works best in Malawi. So Remen also says, we can only serve that to which we are profoundly connected. So building those relationships, understanding each other, learning about culture is about that, building that peace, about being able to serve equally. And then seeing people as equals, not as needy, not as people that need to be saved, not as people that need, someone to come in and tell them how it's done. That's a big problem in a lot of aid programs, and so we're really trying to be aware of, we see the person as filled with potential, and we are just serving that potential. So as Jay read about in the divine plan, I believe that God has selected those persons who are to belong to my plan, and that through proximity, mutual attraction, or need, they and I are continually finding each other out. I believe in praying for an ever-increasing capacity to love and serve them, and for greater worthiness to be loved and served by them in return. So in that, we have that opportunity for service, and as we serve, we are also served, and that's part of that equal relationship, is that when we serve, we can also be served. And part of my prayer that this week has been to draw those people to Spirit in Action who are part of that plan for Spirit in Action. My grandma actually read that part of the divine plan at mine and Boyd's wedding. God has selected those persons who are to belong to my plan. So this can start to feel a little bit heavy, like service has to be big, has to be service in huge manner. I need to give a bunch of, to sign up for all these volunteer activities. Mother Teresa said, if you can't feed 100 people, just feed one. So when it starts to feel overwhelming by how much I need to do, seeing all that need in the world, I just go back to that. If I can't feed 100 people, just feed one. Feed the person in front of me. I can start with a single step, this serving. It can be just as simple as welcoming a new person to dance, welcoming a new person at camp, sending a book to someone who I know will like the book, caring for my friend's children, making them food when they need it. And so when we honor this small service, then we recognize that there's value in helping that one person. When we're serving that one person, we could be serving God, we could be serving Jesus, serving angels unawares. The opposite of that, what blocks me from that, valuing that small service, is what Tara Brach calls the trance of unworthiness, which I mentioned yesterday. This idea that I judge myself for not doing more, and then I get sort of paralyzed into inaction, the trance of unworthiness. I'm not worthy, so I just better stop trying to do anything. So I get this sometimes when I see other big nonprofits. I was like, how big is their budget? They get to do how much? And all I'm just doing this little thing? And so then I go, well, what can I possibly do? And that gets me out of the space of recognizing each time we're serving one person, that is serving one person, it's rippling out to serve more and more people. But it's so easy to get caught in that paralyzing place, to sort of rate how well we're doing by how big we are. And of course, that's a huge busy trap alert. When I try to do more and more and more because I think I should, that's getting out of reality. It goes away from acting with integrity. I have this taped on my desk, so I don't know who said it, but it's a quote that I use to get out of that trance. If you're working for justice and you're living with compassion and integrity, you're probably making a difference in people's lives every day. You might not realize it. You might not realize that when you hold that door open for someone, they're going to go home and do something great for their family. They're going to go on to do something for their friend. That work, that small work of compassion, is making people's lives better. And we don't have to know it to keep doing it. So the truth is, Spirit in Action is small and impactful. So we're serving with justice. We're working for compassion. Working for justice is serving with compassion and integrity. And so we're making a difference. And another part, line, just one line in the divine plan. Becky gave me a small version here. When I am tuned to that which is mine, I find no barrier in God's kingdom. Hence, I accept none. I love that. So when I can just be okay, when I'm attuned to what is mine, when I'm okay with whatever is in front of me, there's no barrier, really. It's just exponential. And so I like this. Hence, I accept none. It's like, no deal. No barrier. So my faith, again, this meaning of life that I talked about, is to live so that I'm contributing to that sum total of love and justice in the world, bringing God's peace and on earth as it is in heaven. And that's God's work for me, this justice and compassion. And I read this year, Reading the Bible Again for the First Time by Marcus Borg. Great book, just sort of overview of how we can see and read the Bible. And he sees a lot of justice work happening in the Bible, which I really love. He says that justice and compassion must be fulfilled together. So we can't just work for one and not work for the other. So compassion without justice is just helping the victims. That's going into that helping mode. It's charity. If we're not also addressing the systems that create more victims. And justice without compassion can just be revenge. It can be ugly. So the two of those together, compassion, love, and justice, are part together of loving God and loving our neighbor. When we're in community, it's more easy to create that feeling, that connectedness for justice and for our compassion. It's hard to hate someone who I'm really connected to. It's easy to serve them. It's really hard to hate them. Once more and more people start knowing more and more gay people, it's really hard to say, I can't accept you. We have to start seeing that acceptance. So change happens when we're willing to have compassion for the world, compassionate relationships for ourselves, that love for ourselves, getting out of that trance of unworthiness, and then we can be there for others. Once we're strong in ourselves, then we can be there. We can start to see when we're making ourselves right and everyone else wrong and move to kindness instead. And then when we do that, when we start accepting more and more people, then there's more and more people that we can work with, who we can really function with and create that peace. It gets larger and larger. One prayer for compassion that I've been doing is breathing in pain of the world and then breathing out joy for all people. Just feeling that suffering and breathing out joy. And part of that is just knowing that joy is possible for every person. I'm not just sending the joy to one person or someone else. I'm breathing out joy, knowing that joy is possible for everyone. And for me, this prayer for community, this prayer of breathing out joy for everyone is, there's so much prayer need in the world, the larger world. And so often we can get our prayers to just people we know. And those dining prayers that Pam mentioned can be for the world, beyond just the people that we know. They can be, you know, invite everyone to the feast. So to sum it up, it's just an invitation to start somewhere. Know that our intention to help and our action to help one person matters over how many people we're helping. But that intention has to be more than just for myself. It has to be about that community, about widening that circle. So maybe you can simply start with welcoming someone into that community, beginning to build that circle, really showing someone that you love them unconditionally, without fear or control of that relationship, really trying to understand and listen to someone who is different, really believing that we don't all have the answers, all the time. Really don't be afraid to state your needs and accept gifts from others. Really think what it would be like if you could say, "This is what I need." And there is the opportunity to recommit to all of this every single day. Hope, who has been my counselor for almost 10 years now, she's always learning. She's almost 90. She's always, always learning. I talk to her every week, and she said, "Here's what I'm working on this week." She's the one who said, "Don't tell a story twice." So, you know, if she starts telling one she's already told me, I call her on it. Always be learning. She said, It's amazing that people in California, we don't have to renew our driver's license. She's almost 90. I don't have to take a road test. So you only have to take the written test. Of course, she passed the written test, but she took driving lessons as well. She took the driving lessons so she would be a responsible citizen and so that she would keep learning. You know, what new are the teachers teaching these days? And Dell Anderson, founder of Spirit in Action, he always talked about fresh manna. I need my fresh manna today. I'm going to use it. I need my fresh manna tomorrow. It was always learning, always taking that freshness, that newness. And so we can recommit every day to this. And that's how that peace on earth begins to build with each of us. Just going to end by reading first part of the divine plan. I believe that God has a divine plan for me. I believe that this plan is wrapped in the folds of my being, even as the oak is wrapped in the acorn and the rose is wrapped in the bud. I believe that this plan is permanent, indestructible, and perfect, free from all that is essentially bad. Whatever comes into my life that is negative is not a part of this God-created plan, but is a distortion caused by my failure to harmonize myself with the plan as God has made it. I believe that this plan is divine, and when I relax myself completely to it, it will manifest completely and perfectly through me. I can always tell when I am completely relaxed to the divine plan by the inner peace that comes to me. This inner peace brings a joyous, creative urge that leads me into activities that unfold the plan, or it brings a patience and a stillness that allows others to unfold the plan to me. So I know that God has a divine plan for the world, for me, for the world, and that it is perfect. And we're just a little bit out of harmony with that plan right now. So I'm working to harmonize myself with God for that plan, that perfect community, that peace. And then we'll come to a place where there is that inner peace and that outer peace as we each unfold the plan. I think that's all I have. So it's just been such an honor to be here this week. Been so welcomed into your community, felt listened to, appreciated, and it's been a real blessing to be able to share this, my life and my work and my soul's sincere desires with you all. So thank you, and I hope to see you again at Winnie sometime soon.
As we get ready for the 9 o'clock prayer, please, just a reminder, tomorrow the World Prayer broadcast is at 9 a.m. out on the field. And elected counseling emeritus and officers will meet at 7 o'clock. And there is a morning meditation, is that correct? Okay. If you want to join the high school at the Corn Roast tonight, you are more than welcome to do that.
10-ish.
10-ish. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Thank you.